Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes.
You're listening to the Innovators Podcast with Tom Kennedy, unpacking the stories of industry leaders in search of the tools, tips, and tricks that make them who they are today.
Hello, hello, hello. I don't know why I did that, but I'll probably leave that in. I am Tom Kennedy, your host for The Innovators, and this is episode 5. You may have noticed, if you have subscribed, which I hope you all have, that this is the second episode within the week. That's because it's a super special episode, and I got to record it in one of the most amazing settings to date, the Zeitz Museum of Contemporary Art Africa, which is opening to the public this weekend. And I recommend you all go take a look and check it out because it's absolutely amazing. And a quick pro tip, if you are going to get yourself an annual membership, because it's just a little bit more than a daily entry, and there's going to be loads of reasons for you to go back over and over again. Workshops, talks, changing exhibitions, a whole bunch of stuff. But let me get back to who I spoke to. I sat down with Executive Director and Chief Curator of the museum itself, Mr. Mark Kutsier, as well as Tokwela Machika, the Assistant Curator for Photography. It was a really great chat with the two of them. We went into the spirit of the museum, its role in telling the story of Africa, the importance of art, how potential artists could even get their work on the walls. And it was a really great chat, loads of takeaways. It's nice and short, nice and punchy. So I hope you guys enjoyed as much as I did. As always, if you have any ideas, suggestions, questions, or guest suggestions, give me a shout. I'm available on all platforms at TKennedySA, and you can also see what goes on behind the scenes of the podcast. And for show notes, relevant links, and pretty much everything else, you can also get it at the Innovators website, theinnovators.co. Make sure you click subscribe. And if you enjoy what you're listening to, drop a review. It's always appreciated. And next week, you can expect Jonathan Shapiro, aka Zapiro. And that, again, is a phenomenal chat. So I hope you guys click subscribe to stay in the loop. Anyway, let's get to it. This is a chat with Mark Kutsier and Tokwela Machika. Enjoy. This is episode 5 of The Innovators. We are sitting in the Zeitz Mocha Museum of Contemporary Art, Africa. And I'm sitting here with the head curator and director of the museum himself. And I'm going to let him give an introduction into what he's doing and how he got here today. And then I'm going to let
Assistant Curator of Photography
also do the same.
So my name is Mark Kutsier. I'm a Cape Town boy for many years, studied abroad, and happy to return home to take the position of Executive Director and Chief Curator of the Zeitz Museum of Contemporary Art, which is situated at the VA waterfront in the brand new Silo District. And my colleague, Tokwela Machika, who's the AKO Foundation Assistant Curator for Photography, sitting next to me. And the two of us are very excited to share some ideas about this amazing new institution.
There's, you've covered it quite well. There are quite a few tongue twisters in those titles there. I think it's been quite some time since I've seen so much excitement about a cultural opening as the current sort of atmosphere in Cape Town at the moment. What do you think it is about the museum that sort of touched that nerve and got everyone so excited? And then also, how do you plan to sort of maintain that and keep that level of interest sort of coming along?
I think what's exciting about the museum is the fact that we are looking towards the local, most importantly, and particularly people who have never been to the museum, art museum. You know, those are our sort of target market. Just to expose them to a different world. And also, it's an opportunity for Africa to actually speak for themselves. And so that is the exciting part about the museum, particularly in South Africa, Cape Town. Yeah.
For a very long time, I think that the narrative of Africa has been written by outsiders. And exactly. I think why this museum is so relevant and why everyone is so excited is because it's not trying to match what's happened elsewhere. Mm. It's attempting to define a model of our own. It's attempting to represent the diversity of all our people, both in Cape Town, South Africa, and the continent. And it's taking the voice back. Obviously, it's not a nationalistic project, but we do feel that we have the right to at least contribute to the way that our history is being written and being recorded.
I agree. Yes. For now, I think this museum would allow the outsiders to actually understand who Africans are. Mm. You know, like you said, Mark, that we don't have to explain ourselves to them. They have to change the perception of what Africa is or who Africans are. Yeah. So.
Because there's sort of that mindset that art almost tells the story of the sort of country or the population sort of mindset. It's a way of sort of seeing history almost told. So I think what you're saying is it's a very valid point that we should be owning that narrative and owning how it's communicated. So I think it's a hugely exciting thing.
Well, I think every city, every country, every person has meaning imposed on them. But you also sell meaning. You sell an idea of yourself. You project an idea of yourself. I mean, selfies, I think, is such an extraordinary phenomena because it allows an individual to be their own media, to be their own voice. So I think increasingly people are becoming more and more aware of who speaks for whom, who has the right to speak for whom, what is the agenda, what is the outcome, what power relationships you have. No, so I think a museum of the 21st century has to take account those kinds of conversations and weave it directly into the narrative of what that museum is. But why are people excited about this museum, to answer your question? It's exciting. It's a world architect who's come in and given Cape Town a unique, iconic architectural building. It's a leading collection in the world of contemporary African art. It's a group of cutting-edge, extraordinary curators. It's programming that which is relevant to living at this place, at this time, dealing with subjects that impact on all of us. This is not art about art for art's sake. This is not pretty pattern making. This is not splashes of color on canvas. This is about love and greed and passion and lust and politics and economics and desire and fear, you know, all the things that make us human.
So is that part of I wanted to actually touch on your curation criteria and how you look at what art will be brought in and has been brought in. So do you look at really emotive art? Is that something that you're looking for?
We basically, Mark, you would add on this. I think our selection of the works that are up in the exhibition or in the museum is we looked at the lived experience. You know, I think that is the most powerful thing when it comes to, particularly in our continent, in our country. You know, a lived experience is very important. You know, we're trying to deconstruct having somebody outside telling somebody else's story. You know, so that is basically one of the criteria that we used in selecting the work that are up
and in the museum. You're talking about the curatorial criteria. So if we do an exhibition about women's issues, you know, then perhaps women have a much better understanding of those issues. Or if we're doing a major project on LGBTQI+ issues, and we make sure that the person who is curating that exhibition has lived experience within that group. I think then it goes beyond that as well, and that is that we want to be sure that the lived experience of the individual is reflected as well. So the work is sensorial, it's immersive, it's exciting, it surrounds you, it kind of pulls you in. This is not work necessarily for our opening show where you need to have an art history degree. You just need to know how to use a handheld device or a computer. So we've really emphasized digital technologies, photography, video, projections, film, where especially younger people have a very innate, almost intuitive way of using these mediums. And I think that because we're a museum of this time, we want to be a living museum. We want to talk about lived experience, about authentic knowledge of subjects, and then also create dialogues with people. Because if we can have a lived experience, you're going to really honestly represent what that experience is to somebody who hasn't experienced it. Mm. And hopefully, in your honest projection of that lived experience, hopefully you can open the eyes of somebody else. You can help them to understand what your shoes feel like, you know, what your existence feels like. And in that process, hopefully they might understand you better.
Yes.
And you gave me goosebumps to that. I can sort of see where you're going with that.
If we understand each other better,
yes,
we're probably less threatened by each other. Mm. If we're less threatened by each other, hopefully we won't kill each other, you know.
Yeah, it's very nice to hear. I think it's a really great approach. It also brings me to another. I've got two points I wanted to sort of examine. One is there an overarching narrative that you're trying to communicate throughout all the exhibits as a whole, as a sort of entity? And then also, I saw it's about authentically African art. How do you sort of qualify something as authentically African? If an artist creates something as a non-African, but the focal point is Africa, does that then qualify? Or what are those criteria? Is it location? Is it the artist? Is it the focal point? I'm just curious what...
You know, I think that a new museum like this, its greatest risk is to define things up front. To be prescriptive, to say this is what African is. I think what this museum is about... is about saying we'll have a conversation about what it means to be African.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Very good.
I think we, as a museum, we all see ourselves as instigators of this difficult question. I mean, I was speaking earlier on with another colleague, and I was telling him that we're in the process of defining what does it mean to be African, you know, because I don't think personally... I haven't come to a place where I could actually define that, you know. The knowledge of being African has been provided by somebody from outside, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So the museum does need some parameters. So the parameters that we started with is if you're born in Africa, if you live and work in Africa, and that could mean that you were born here through many generations or thousands, hundreds of generations, or it could have been that you immigrated yesterday. It's just, is this your home? Is this your place? Okay. It could mean people from this continent who live elsewhere, like the African-American community who were displaced through slavery, or the Haitian community. It could mean that people who live in Europe from North Africa who've recently immigrated to seek a better life or to escape suppression. So it's really a very loose idea of Africa and its influences. It covers all 54 states in Africa, and the African diaspora. Remember, Africa is a very complex continent. It's divided into artificial land masses from the colonial inheritance. It's also divided among languages, many, many indigenous languages, and then also the Lusophone, Francophone, and Anglophone colonial languages. So there's so many divisions. But I think, as Tukwila said, you know, we want to investigate what it means to be African. Now, why would one do that? Why would we have to question this? And I think perhaps what we're doing is we're dealing with the legacy of separation. So much of Africa has been divided. Think of the apartheid era when our apartheid government would give arms to different groups to make them fight against each other because you divide and then you conquer. And so I think in some ways the museum is aware of this diversity, this difference, this uniqueness, the multitudes of cultures on the continent. But we also want to drive perhaps that there are similarities as well. And one of the similarities of experience is the inheritance of colonialism, you know, the kind of unique displacement that all of us have suffered, whether we were local people who were invaded or whether we were foreigners who were the invaders who now call us home, you know. So it's a very, very complex issue.
Yeah, I can imagine it. And I think you've touched on a number of very valid points. And I think it's also something that's going to make it a particularly diverse and a particularly interesting museum as time moves forward. That also leads me to smaller exhibitions and ongoing exhibitions. What can people expect coming in the future? So I'm not 100% sure, but I read somewhere about there were up to 80 smaller exhibition spaces.
So we
spaces.
Have 100 galleries.
Oh, okay, 100.
Just over 100 galleries. The way the museum is structured, it's not on a traditional museum, so we don't have departments. We have two floors for permanent exhibition galleries, two floors for temporary galleries, exhibitions that would start with us and travel around the world, or come from elsewhere to us, remember that we collect art from Africa and the diaspora, but we show everything. We have six independent institutions which deal with specific focuses that we were interested in: the moving image, performative practice, artists who use the body, photography, because of its importance in Africa in the liberation struggles and the anti-apartheid movement, costume, because this is really where fashion began, a major curatorial training program where we graduate 25 young curators annually, as well as an art education center. So the idea is that we have a lot of geography, we have a lot of space, we have a lot of art. We have currently, we have 21 curators. We'll have 39 by the time we finished. And we hope that the museum will be extremely diverse in its viewpoint. Why don't you talk about this?
Yeah, I was just about to answer the question you asked, what the visitors should expect. And first thing that came to mind was tension, you know, because of these independent institutions. And because each institution would function independently, you know, so you'll find that in costume they're dealing with scarification, you know, photography, it's migration, you know, so you'll find that there's going to be excitement, dynamism in the museum. So, yeah.
Is part of the goal to have people leave here with a new sort of perspective and to sort of spark debate and discussion?
Yes, I think that's important. For me personally, I feel like if people could live here with a different perception towards how we treat each other, humanity, you know, at large, that would be very important, because this is a space where we need to talk about difficult issues, you know. And Zaid's Mocha definitely allows that, you know. So if we could just instigate and facilitate those talks, those debates, and give people another way of looking, you know, because that is important. We just want to change a bit of how we look at things.
But in a very safe environment.
Yes, yes, yes.
In an environment where you come in and you treat it with kindness and respect, where there's baby changing facilities and beautiful, beautiful clean toilets and restaurants and coffee shops and bookshops and a cappuccino bar and, you know, everything that would make it comfortable.
Yes.
So that you're not threatened by the environment, so that the subject itself can become the focus. And so and because you're not threatened by the experience, we can really allow artists and curators to push the boundaries around the subject itself.
But also to find people who are very kind and gentle, you know, who are willing to give their time to speak to any ordinary person and treat each person with respect, regardless of their status, you know. So that's what is important. Yeah,
I think that also touches on something else. We Africa as a whole, it's a very there's a polarization. There's people who've been through extreme struggles. Mm. There's people of high wealth and people of low wealth. So it leads to art can be perceived quite as an elitist type of sort of, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? It can be perceived as elitist. What's the plan and the sort of goal for the future to sort of really influence at grassroots level and change the access, the idea and the perception of art amongst sort of the more underprivileged people?
The museum has made three very strong commitments to make sure that we don't feel fall trap to that. Obviously, we do massive fundraisers where people pay a fortune to come to parties. Those happen one day a year, 2 days a year, if we're lucky. Those are opportunities where the more advantaged people in our community come together and they create the funds for the museum to be accessible for all for the whole year.
Which is understandable.
So it's kind of a Robin Hood kind of thing, you know. And I think every museum in the world and every not-for-profit has to do that. So what are the three things? The first is that the museum and its operations has to be welcoming and friendly, and I think Tukwela has spoken about that. The staff are trained in customer service, in kindness, in how to deal with the public. Also, the building itself is designed in such a way that there's no pillars and lions and steps and all the stuff that makes you intimidated. Mm. You walk in and it's just a kind of a industrial, very cool building with kind of cool spaces. That's the first thing. The second thing is content. And the biggest question that everyone has asked us, will I be represented in the space? you can make the space free, you can make it trendy, but you know, if it doesn't represent you as an individual, yes, you're not interested. Mm. You need to know that you are represented in that space. So we've gone to great efforts to make sure that we diverse and representative in all our exhibitions across the board. And that includes racial origin, religion, orientation, value systems, aesthetics, financial income, because you need to know that who you are and what you represent in your cultural activity is respected enough to be elevated in a museum. Because I think a lot of museums talk about, well, free, 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 and if it's free, people won't come if it's free, yeah, necessarily. They need, mm-hmm, it still has to be, have value, yeah, and power for them.
It's actually so true. Sorry, what you've touched on there, you gave me goosebumps again, but that feeling of, I know when I've been overseas and there's been an African exhibition and you go in and you do feel that sense of belonging.
Pride, yeah, it's,
and I remember to going with friends, and goosebumps again, but there's that feeling of ownership that's, mm, and exactly what you touched on there, that feeling of pride that this is important enough, yes, to be exhibited.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So I think you've touched on something, yeah, amazing.
We're not a secondary society. We're not a our artists are innovative. They're amazing. They're, mm, making, and the value systems that we hold dear are just as valid as anywhere else in the world. And they need to be learned about. They need to be promoted. They need to be exposed. And then the third one, obviously, is financial access and transportation. So we've worked very, very hard to establish an endowment called Access for All. And that's our primary fundraising activity. Over time, we hope to get more and more. But currently, we can offer Wednesday mornings free for everybody from South Africa and Africa.
Oh, wow.
Are all people under 18 free the whole, yes, year round? The first Friday of every month, half price with late hours. Two museum nights a year for free. All public holidays for free. And a membership program where membership is literally R5 more than one single admission ticket.
I noticed that. Membership is very affordable.
Yeah. So if you buy membership, you can literally come in. We'll have literally almost every day, there'll be a lecture, a workshop, an exhibition opening, a performance, a forum, an arena project, whatever. So you could come 10, 20, 30 times a year, and it would literally cost you a few rand to get in.
That's absolutely
more importantly
amazing
than that, we estimate that only 50% of our visitors will be paid admission and 50% will be complimentary admission. So that is school children who will be bused in from all over the Western Cape. We have partnerships already with 76 schools in the surrounding area who will bring the kids in, and that's all completely free. And then on top of that, transportation. Not everyone in our country owns a motor vehicle.
Yeah.
So we've worked with the city of Cape Town to make sure that there's a MyCity public transportation terminus right next to the museum. All the tourism buses stop in front of the museum. There's a fan walk, a little public walkway that now will connect the waterfront to downtown and to the railway station so people can use public transport. It's the first time that the waterfront has actually been publicly accessible for pedestrians, you know. So before you had to walk, it was kind of tough. So I think we've gone to great lengths to try and cover everything that would exclude somebody from accessing the place: financial, transport, content, and service.
That's absolutely amazing to hear, and I'm definitely going to try and highlight that, because I think that's really is something great that people can come in and experience this so easily.
We know the person who writes history are the people who define public space. It's the people who build the monuments, who make the town squares, who make the facades of buildings, who make universities and museums and hospitals and stuff. And we have to be sure that all the people of our country participate in the writing of that history, yes, in the defining of that public space, because then they will be part of the recording of history. I think for a very long time, unfortunately, limited people have defined public space, which means it records history from their point of view.
Yeah, that's very true. I think I don't want to hold you too long, but I want to touch South Africa as a unique history with certain art pieces, and it has a tendency to create discussion, but as well as friction between racial groups within the country. What's your position going to be on more controversial pieces and those pieces that might spark a bit more than just discussion, let's say?
Do you want to take it or shall I?
You take it.
We have a policy of non-censorship of any kind. We believe in the absolute freedom of expression, which is protected in our constitution. We must be sensitive, obviously, to hate speech and to speech or representation that might hurt people. So our policy is to indicate to people what might be in certain galleries so that they have the choice whether they want to look at it or not. I think it would be very insensitive of us to expect to expose people to things and take their choices away from them. So freedom of expression is the absolute right of an artist, but freedom of what you see and what you don't see is also the individuals.
And I think,
so long as we keep that balance. We're very fortunate that our Board of Governance has made a very strong statement that they will never interfere with content. And I think in a way, that is the role of a contemporary art museum. If we're not going to deal with difficult issues, we might as well just close down, you know. So when those, it's not that we're going to preempt those issues. We don't want to be sensationalist, but when they come up, I think it's our role to facilitate conversations, forums, discussions to help us to understand why is this controversial? Why does it bother people? I think that's going to be the great opportunities for an institution like ours.
I was going to add that and say friction can be good. Controversy can be good, especially if we find a way of how to handle it.
Yeah.
Remember Mark said this is a safe environment. So probably when that time comes with this controversy because of our exhibition, we'll be ready to, you know, to handle that and facilitate those conversations. And hopefully when people leave, they leave more
informed.
Yeah. Because that's the whole process of you know, having discussion, that you get informed, maybe even to change your perception a bit about certain issues.
And contemporary culture, I mean, if you think, people have asked me, what would the success of this museum be? You know, if it's predictable, if it's status quo, I would feel that we've failed. If this museum is slightly chaotic, it's slightly subversive, it's a little underground, if you're never quite sure what's next, like, you know, every time you think you've sorted out, the curators or the artists throw something else at you, I think that's the role of a museum, you know. There are organizations in civil society which is to establish absolute law and order, and then there's other organizations which are there to push back against that, to make us reconsider the structures of society. And I hope very much that this museum, not that we want it to be anti-establishment or anarchistic, but part of its role must be that, to, you know, we must encourage artists to challenge what we think is true and what we hold dear and push us, and that's how we advance as a people.
Okay, and then I'm going to start closing off, but I was curious, I like to, one of the reasons I started the Innovators was also to enable and give people the tools or ideas of how to create and succeed. And if there are young artists listening, how would you say the best approach to creating something different or creating something that one day could sit on the walls or be an installation within this space? What am I trying to touch on here? What recommendations would you give to artists out there trying to break out and be discovered, or to catch your eye, shall I say?
That's really difficult. Think outside the box. Think big. Really think big. I think having Zayt Mocha has kind of allowed me personally as a curator, and hopefully for the artists as well, to actually imagine beyond, you know. Just think outside the book. Think big, because the space allows that, you know. Yeah.
Amazing.
Mark?
I would say, and this is not an institutional response, this is a very personal response.
Yeah.
I've taught at many universities. I've been engaged with artists for a very long time. And I think whatever you do, don't be what you think you should be. When you look at art and you think you've figured it out, don't try to copy it or emulate it, because that's done already. Believe in yourself, believe in your quirkiness, believe in your uniqueness is what makes you powerful. Your specificity is what gives you something to bring to the conversation. So investigate and dig deep and find out things which make you particular. It might be particularly boring, it might be particularly exciting, it might be particularly moral, or it might be particularly immoral. But it's those particularities that bring stuff. Remember, societies that have tried to put walls around themselves, like China in the Great Wall or whatever, those societies eventually stagnate because there's no influence from the outside. If you think of human health, the thing that makes humans, you know, in all science fiction that you read, when we're invaded by aliens, there's one thing that always saves us. It's the viruses that we've become immune to, and the aliens die because of it. So it's be a virus, be something that's changing things, because change initially is very hard, but it makes us healthier. Challenge is uncomfortable, but it makes us more confident. And so by being that one particular thing that kind of morphs everything, that's how, if there is any chance of being a great artist, I think that's what it is. You know, it's very difficult. Art is not about making something new anymore.
No.
You know, in the 20th century, it was isms. It was about you rejecting the past, making a manifesto to make something new. Now it's not about that. I think now it's about people are interested in unique voices, and they're interested in voices which are particular. So we all steal, we all appropriate. I mean, you think of Instagram, we take images from everyone else. We don't even generate the images ourselves. But it's the way you combine things. It's the combinations, it's the relationships, it's the disjoint, it's the contradictions, it's all that. It's, I think in a way, we kind of all curate our own lives right now. Yeah. We curate our social pages, we curate our relationships through social media. We don't just haphazardly experience these things. And I think artists have a very unique moment in the world because they have so much imagery available to them at a click of a button. So you can't make anything new. You can't. But what you can do is you can have a particular viewpoint of how you combine all that information. And that is, I think, super exciting.
That's amazing. I actually think that's a really great way for us to close off. And I think part of why podcasts are actually so is they also allow for the curation. You were saying people are controlling what they're letting into their lives. They're curating content. They're telling different stories. And, you know, it's a really great point. I was going to touch on the amazing building we're sitting in, but I can gladly share all of that content online in the show notes. Is there anything else you'd like to mention in closing? I know you're both terribly busy and I don't want to keep you any longer, but
I'd like to remind your listeners that we are open all week except Tuesdays from 10 to 6. Admission is very affordable. Membership is great. You can get in whenever you want. Almost every day there's something new happening. There's 3 guided tours daily, there's workshops, there's film series. Take time, arrive early. It'll take you about 4.5 hours to finish the whole museum. Arrive, spend 2 hours, grab some lunch in the restaurant, keep going, or come back. Every few weeks there's a new exhibition that opens. So what we hope is that the public will see this as not as something special, it's just something that you do every day. Like you go to the gym, like you go to the shop, you pop by and you see some art and you enrich your life. So, and we'd love to hear from everybody. Our Twitter pages are Zeitsmoker, Facebook, etc. And all the information is on our website, zeitsmoker.museum.
And I'll be linking to all of the relevant content, relevant pages, and a whole bunch of information that I've already found on the museum. So if you want to check out the show notes on the website, they'll all be available. And a huge thank you to you both for your time. It's a crazy time, I can imagine, for you. And you've been absolutely phenomenal. Really great episode, really great content. And I hope you all enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Goodbye. Bye.
And that's the end of episode 5. I hope you all enjoyed the episode and the content and everything covered. If you have any ideas, suggestions, and all of that, please get in touch at TKennedySA across all platforms or theinnovators.co for other ways to contact me or drop feedback. Next week, we have Jonathan Shapiro, aka Zapiro, an amazing episode where we go into creative output, managing creativity, and the history of South Africa in general. There's a whole bunch in that episode and it's really great. So as always, click subscribe and leave a review if you feel like supporting the show. We are not brand supported and reviews are the best way you can help us out, or sharing episodes that you find entertaining. I really appreciate you guys giving it a listen. Thanks so much. Cheerio.